NASA has been given its loftiest charge since the 1960s, and KSC has a critical role.
We know we're standing on the shoulders of giants, and it's pretty nostalgic and pretty emotional.
Next on the Rocket Ranch.
EGS Program Chief Engineer, verify no constraints to launch.
EGS Chief Engineer Team has no constraints.
I copy that. You are clear to launch.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and liftoff.
Power clear. Now passing through max Q, maximum dynamic pressure.
Welcome to space.
NASA is accelerating a human return to the moon and will put the first woman and the next man on the lunar south pole by 2024. The agency is going back to the moon in two phases. The first is focused on speed. Second, NASA will establish sustainable missions by 2028. The Gateway will be the center of that exploration, serving as a home base in lunar orbit for missions to the surface of the moon and beyond. The Gateway will be a collaboration with NASA, international partners, and commercial companies.
Kennedy has been handed a piece of the puzzle, and Mark Weiss will leverage the expertise already at the Space Center to lead the logistics team for Gateway.
I was able to catch up with Mark, but first, a disclaimer. While we're definitely headed back to the moon, we are still working out some of the details. As you enjoy this podcast, keep in mind that plans and details are in flux, and what was accurate at the time of recording may have changed since then. Which is great, because that just gives us a reason to do a follow-up episode. Now, Mark.
We love rockets down here, and this is the Rocket Ranch podcast.
We sure do. We love rockets.
Should have anticipated that coming.
And his sidekick, Johnny Wynn.
It feels like it's like project management 101.
Hoping they could teach me a thing or two about Gateway. But first, I had some nagging questions about our history with the moon.
Probably one of the most significant things we can think about when we think about Apollo is that it has opened for us being the world, a challenge of the future. The door is now cracked, but the promise of that future lies in the young people, not just in America, but the young people all over the world.
All right, so I am here now in the booth with Mark Weiss and Johnny Wynn. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me.
Thank you
for having us.
So I want to actually go way back for a second and ask the question, why did we stop flying to the moon? Because we're about to celebrate 50th anniversary of the first man walking on the moon. And it's been a long time since we've been there. So we're about to return to that kind of phase of exploration. But why stop?
I think the place our country was at back then, it just wasn't as urgent anymore. You know, we made that initial, you know, flag to show we were beating the Russians and the space race that we had going on at the time. And I think in our country, there was a lot more politically going on domestically of where to spend money, what was a priority, and space just wasn't the priority right then.
So is that to say that we've kind of come full circle now and like this is becoming a greater priority for our nation?
I'm not sure it's full circle or even a greater priority, but that's where we're at right now.
Just as the United States was the first nation to reach the moon in the 20th century, so too will we be the first nation to return astronauts to the moon in the 21st century.
So I think that's an exciting place to be, where getting to the moon, going to Mars with this mandate from the White House.
What's really the significance of returning to the moon for NASA and for America?
I think it's all super, a great time to be here at the Space Center.
So it's finally at the point where we can go really expand and get out of low Earth orbit, right? We've been trying to commercialize low Earth orbit for a while, and now we're at the point where we can go find a way to leverage the technologies, try to learn from a deep space environment, and the moon is our closest neighbor to go from. And other countries are going now. I mean, you see, competition is something that's in our veins, you know, as Americans, right? So China just put a rover on the moon. So we want to be a part of that again, right? So that's what charges our political machine to try to find a way to help us get there.
So between almost 50 years ago when we left the moon and our return, hopefully within the next 5 years, we've done a lot. We've learned a lot. And so what has been that evolution for us of, hey, we're smarter now. Like it might be taking us a little bit of time to get back there, but we're way smarter than we were 45 years ago.
I think a lot of it is fiscally. Like it's costed us tons of money to do what we've done. And we, you know, shuttle was announced and supposed to launch weekly, right? And we couldn't pull that off. And now, you know, there's ways for commercial companies to make money with data from on orbit, right? I mean, our cell phone companies want to find a way to get out of the cell tower business and into orbit. So there's more of an industry participation, which is helping us, I think, make these steps quicker. Then you take the miniaturization of electronics, you know, additive manufacturing capabilities. It's just a little more doable.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. Like back then, it was just NASA, but nowadays we got so many different commercial companies, commercial partners, and all of us working together using the right capabilities with each other. I think that's what's really spurring the innovation and the ability to get back so much faster this time around.
I mean, ISS was sold. It was the first program I worked, you know, when I first came out of college. And ISS was all about science. And I remember in the beginning, it was this constant battle of, well, things are going wrong. Things are breaking. We have to spend crew time on fixing things. And you just couldn't get science up there. And they're finally at that point, 6-person crew, and you have talks of a commercial space station and lots of healthcare companies and research and development companies trying to find ways to take advantage of microgravity to benefit all of us.
So you mentioned, obviously, both of you, the commercial aspect of where we are today. So I'm assuming that it's safe to say that as we look towards Gateway, which obviously we're going to get to here in a second, we're going arm in arm with commercial companies to make this a successful mission, yeah?
Yes, arm in arm. And, you know, it's both. We need them, again, this commercial business case that's starting to be out there. The first piece of Gateway is a power propulsion element. So there's commercial satellites that will benefit from solar propulsion, solar electric propulsion, and, you know, finding ways to leverage that for us as well.
The power and propulsion element will provide power, propulsion, and communications to the entire Gateway. NASA is getting ready to make an award to an American company or companies to develop, launch, and test this element. It's targeted to launch on a commercial rocket by 2022.
Yeah, I mean, so arm in arm, sometimes they're pulling us, sometimes we're pulling them, but one way or another, we're all in this together. And of course, you can't forget the government side of the house too, with SLS and Orion. That's a crucial, crucial piece for us as well. And how it all plays together, I think that's what makes it interesting and hopefully a positive perception by everybody too.
It's a way to make us stronger. You know, the beginning of NASA, that 10 healthy centers, and you spread out the political leverage across the country. Now we have this spread out political leverage over government systems, commercial systems, all working and leveraging each other. It's a really good time.
So, Mark, tell me, what exactly is Gateway?
So Gateway is a lunar outpost in the moon's orbit. It's a camping trip. You know, we're going 250,000 miles away from home. We need just the minimal stuff. You know, it's an RV in lunar orbit. It's small.
Okay.
It's not space station. It's a spacecraft. It's a lunar outpost, a waypoint for us to aggregate pieces and really to get down to the surface of the moon.
And so is this a deliver it all at one time? Is this fly things one piece at a time like we did with space station and connect them once we're in orbit? What's the process for getting from Earth's surface to orbit around the moon?
So it's that one piece at a time, like we did space station, and definitely figure out what's that minimal capability you need now that we have this huge charge to land humans on the moon within 5 years. So get up that power propulsion element, commercially launched, delivery on orbit, actually, where a commercial provider will get it on orbit, check it out for a year on their own, and then turn it over to the government. So we will kind of be even more hands-off there. Then JSC's building a utilization module, kind of like a node on space station, bunch of docking ports, connector space, some habitable volume on the inside. Get that up there. Get logistics up there so that you've got some supplies, and then start to put pieces of a lander up there so we can get boots on the moon in 2024. And then after that, you grow Gateway a little bit more, and you start to put some habitable volume on there, and you get a little bigger.
And it feels like we couldn't do what we do today with our strategy without the foundational steps of what LSP has done, commercial crew has done, commercial cargo resupply, all these other folks. So like, I can't imagine doing a program like this in the way we're doing it, lean and agile, 10, 15 years ago.
I mean, the timing is perfect with commercial crew. I mean, all the work they've had to do to put human systems on commercial rockets and figure out how to get requirements lined up to give a lot to the commercial providers and find a way to assess it on our side. Mm-hmm. We're going to learn and leverage from that. You know, Gateway's going to be a human-tended system when Orion docks. So we're trying to find that sweet spot of we're not human-rated all the time, but when Orion's there, we've got to find the right requirements to levy. So, I mean, we're leveraging all over the place. And then partnering with EGS, like I said, SLS Orion is key. That's how we get the crew up there. And ideally, the agency wants that huge heavy lift capability to put up as big a pieces as we can. That's where you get efficiencies of scale.
So, all right, so coming back to where we are now, so Mark, you have been and I might get this wrong, so correct me. You've been set up as the director at the Kennedy Space Center for the logistics module of Gateway.
What is your title?
Yeah, yeah, so I'll come off of that pedestal that Josh put me on. I am the manager of the logistics element, which is really just a project office. So Johnson Space Center is the program office for Gateway, for all the different pieces of Gateway. And my title now, I guess I'm, Johnny, like 2 weeks, maybe a month, it's official, I think. So it's manager logistics element for the Gateway program.
In my defense, Mark described his job about three different ways to me over the course of our time together that day. The punchline is that these guys are way more focused on getting the job done than job titles.
I just make up a new title for Yermi Week.
So. Just every time somebody asks you, just make it up a little bit different.
Oh, Mark, czar of logistics. Yes.
What exactly is the logistics module and what's kind of included in that?
So we're officially given the logistics element. The element term means project office. So we are all things delivery services to Gateway. That includes a launch and a spacecraft. The spacecraft will include a logistics module, so a volume that can carry cargo, whether it's inside pressurized and it'll hook up to a docking port and astronauts can go enter that habitable volume and do science or take out food or load it with trash. And it's also the external ability to lock payloads onto the outside or other pieces of Gateway that we might want to bring up, like a robotic arm.
And so Johnny, where do you fit in this picture with Gateway?
I am supporting Mark in helping to set up what I'll call the project control type stuff.
Listen to the inflection in his voice, because he's not sure what his title yet is either.
So project control, what does that mean? Unpack that for me.
So it's like all the background, backbone type stuff, risk management, config management, budget, resource, workforce, standing up the organization, data management, how do we all collaborate and work together cohesively as a team. So hopefully it's all the behind-the-scenes type stuff that just makes things work easier.
He's selling himself short. So, I mean, the amount of whiteboard sessions we've done in the past, I don't know if there's a title for, like, strategist. I mean, that's what the two of us spent a lot of time in the beginning trying to brainstorm. How do we pull in and leverage the rest of the center? How do we do this? And that he's got great creative brains, so it's been a huge help. So
what's got you really excited? What are you really focused on going into this project?
I love doing what I'm doing right now. So today has been this really cool day where we did these two town halls at the center, and I get to sit in this like padded room that's not because I'm banging my head against the wall.
Yeah, I was going
to
say,
because you're trying to make sure like I can get the message out. I enjoy trying to inspire others and connect them with this awesome mission that we get. We do a lot of hard things in this agency, and it's so easy to get wrapped up in the art of what's impossible. And I get to try to help inspire people to the art of the possible, and that's what gets me out of bed.
So explain to me a little bit about kind of the path forward for Gateway. So obviously you guys are, it seems like you're really in kind of a brainstorming and planning period. So how much do the other operations of Gateway impact you guys, and how much of it is you guys just really trying to figure out, like, we need to be masters of what our piece here. We need to make sure we can connect to the other guy, but we're just here doing our thing.
There's so much of that going on right now. It's, you know, the traditional NASA way of doing things is line up all these requirements, decompose requirements for a long time, get them all perfect, and then let's go move forward. And we don't have that time. So, I mean, why don't you talk about Johnny's in the throes right now of a bottoms up, you know? We have to go figure out what this is going to cost for the next 10 years. And you're starting at zero.
10 years, man.
That's
trying to figure out how much it costs.
Have we been here 10 years?
Right.
I don't think I've been to this center. No, I guess we've been here 10 years. Time goes fast. But, I mean, that's hard. Think about the early years of your career and saying, all right, what am I going to do for the next 10 years? That's hard.
Yeah, but it does feel like it's, I don't know, you tell me if I'm wrong here, Mark, but it feels like it's like project management 101 to the degree where, all right, let's start up this massive new project. What will it take? I got to assemble the team. I got to figure out roles and responsibility. What are the crucial first steps I need to outline out there? Let that get some traction, let that grow a little bit, and then as the team grows and as the responsibility grows, we'll just keep on expanding a little bit more. But the core building blocks have to be there in terms of like requirements, operations, schedules, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, and it, you know, it's more, it brings more emphasis to light of how you have to trust people and leverage expertise, right? Delegate things down to the lowest level. Ask people what they think is right, and make sure you have open communication, transparent communication as you roll that stuff up, and everybody understands the trades you're bouncing around in your head. because you're spitballing it. You're trying to take that early wag. And then in the requirements trade space, I mean, that's eating our lunch right now, trying to level two would like to really, and I say level two, the program office at JSC, right? They're working hard to try to nail down exactly what this is, but it's a commercial partnership. So there's only so much they know, and we don't have the time to wait for everything. So we're trying to run in parallel with them and communicate along the way. All right, we're writing this down. Does that look like it lines up with you? And as long as we set up our contracts appropriately and have the flexibility, you can always change things. It might cost you money to change things, but if you set it up the right way and you push down authority to the contracts as well, you should have the flexibility to enable this in the long run.
Sustainability is a big component of our return to the moon. But what's that mean?
We gotta be sustainable. We have to find a way to be reusable, right? I mean, we're spending the taxpayers' dollars. Let's not just throw it all away in one shot. We want to go there to stay, and ultimately we want to find ways to push towards deep space transportation capabilities so that we can go out further in our solar system. So this is the bound, you know, the learning, the early building blocks for us to get there.
And on a technical level, what do you see as being the greatest engineering challenges? Are we talking about we're just repackaging lots of great technology, or are we like cutting edge stuff here?
So the environment out there in the lunar vicinity is much harsher. So a lot stronger radiation environment. The extremes of hot and cold are definitely tougher. The biggest challenge, and I remember an early control board talking through this, we're not going to have a crew there 24/7. So how do we make sure we're not just throwing things up to our garage and it sits there forever like happens at my house? So there's a lot of talk about how do we make sure we have intra-vehicle robotics, and how do we design things now for capabilities we're not sure of how we'll use them yet. So we got to like really leverage flexible designs so that we can do as many things autonomously as possible.
I've been told that the orbit is not what you would typically think about for like orbiting a body. Like space station stays fairly similar range to the Earth as it orbits. It's like something like 150 to 250 miles. But I've heard that the orbiter on the moon for Gateway is much different. Is that accurate?
It's a highly elliptical orbit. So it gets really close. Right now they're looking at, again, this halo orbit, near rectilinear halo orbit. It's an elliptical orbit. I don't know. We're starting to get out of my wheelhouse. This is why we're leveraging LSP, because the PR only goes so far. You know, the orbital mechanics, it takes a lot of smart people that know exactly what they're doing. It's in that highly elliptical orbit. We're orbiting the Earth just like the moon. So we just showed some views in a town hall where if you step back, Gateway orbits the Earth, goes around the Earth, you know, in the same period as the moon. And then if you look at it from a different perspective, it's this highly elliptical orbit around the moon and kind of leveraging some of the equilibrium points in gravity, the Lagrange points out there, so that it's pretty stable, it's easy to get in and out of, and it's a great place to leverage science opportunities.
So spitball me some numbers. When we're at our, how close do we get at our closest, and how far do we get away at our furthest?
I don't know. I'd be making it up.
Hey, you said that's what you're doing right now, right? You said you're just making it up as you go.
I want to say you're in like the, I don't even know, hundreds of kilometers at the closest, and then it's probably tens of thousands at the furthest.
Okay.
I go back and look at that, and then everybody can laugh at me and say, yep, keep him doing podcasts and not actually running pen to paper. It's not as close as space station. When it gets in that low orbit around the moon, I wish I still had Joe Dant. He was just in here with us with the town hall. You know, we got some really sharp people across this center that know this stuff better. But I don't think it gets as close as space station is to us today. So you got to have the lunar landers have to bring the capabilities to actually descend. But again, the gravity well is a lot different. It's not as strong, so it's easier to get down. And then they got to have the ascent capability to get back. So Gateway's kind of that safe haven for them to get back to and be able to stage the crew, get back on Orion, and get back home.
Mark was actually pretty close. We got a hold of Joe Dant, who is the ranking member of the Gateway team representing safety and mission assurance, and he was able to confirm that Gateway's apolune, or furthest point from the moon, is 75,000 kilometers, and its perilune, or closest point to the moon, is 3,200 kilometers. At its closest, that's about the diameter of the moon, and at its farthest, it is equivalent to about 20% of the distance between the Earth and the moon.
And so why is this kind of an orbit better than just kind of staying close to the moon and kind of keeping that tight orbit around the moon?
Because then it's easier for Orion to get to, right? So we don't have to have the tight tolerances of getting Orion really close to the moon. You can go rendezvous with Gateway when it's further away, and it's not as hard to get into. It gives you a little bit less delta V to get there. And then you ride this orbit, you know, when you kind of switch planes a little bit and ride this orbit in closer to the surface.
And I know you mentioned 10 years for budget, planning. That's a long time. So what's the projected timeline for things coming together? Like, and when you think about a 10-year plan, what are you guys putting in that 10-year plan?
So kind of like you mentioned, the first element launches.
For the record, I just got a couple guys staring at each other really like
it's like changing every day. So we had to like look at each other like, what did anything happen this morning? Did it change again?
I mean, like there's a manifest out there. So there's a high level of guidance as far as like, here's Gateway, here's the essential building blocks for that, and here's when we want to launch it and put it all together. So we have a rough master plan, per se, to build against, and that's what we're executing against. So as we lay in the details for each of those components, we kind of fine-tune it and say, oh, okay, I think this is much more realistic. Oh, hey, I think this is not so realistic, or we'll need some more money to make this happen or not. So I think that's where this cycle all comes together and say, we have the rough blueprints, but as we come together with this project management review, I think we'll see exactly, okay, this is highly achievable, this we need to carry a risk against, and we can work on that over the next couple of years, you know.
I mean, Space Station took 10, 12 years for assembly complete, that first FGB in the node, I think, went up in 98. Mr. Cabana's, hear him like scratching his head wondering why I don't know the exact date. That was his mission. So that was the first two pieces going together. The first crew went on orbit. That was when I first started working, was in October 2000. And, you know, it went through the end of the shuttle program, was getting all the major pieces up there and assembling it. So, right, we're not a space station. Mentioned that before. It's something smaller. So it's like six launches, you know, to get all the main pieces we need put together. So everything that we're looking at in this 10-year period is in the short term. It's accelerated a little bit to get boots on the moon even sooner.
And is the focus really on the moon at that point, or is there opportunity to use Gateway for further exploration?
So the focus is definitely on the moon. But what Gateway is showing, it's that test objective for us to start to understand what would it take to go to Mars. So the agency's looked at for years a deep space transport capability, which would have to be something small to have habitable volume for a crew and have to have some kind of propulsion, right, that could get them out there, and you'd probably dock Orion to it. So Gateway's kind of a first analog for what that might become and help us learn from that. Just like we learned in low Earth orbit space station, now we're going to go learn 250,000 miles away from home, something a lot smaller, that camping trip, and start to understand how we can explore deep space.
Will there be a regular human presence on board like we see with Space Station today?
So no. So Space Station, right, it's got 24/7 human operations. Gateway is that camping trip. So we're setting it up to go out there for a 30-day mission at first. And as we start to expand the habitable capabilities of the modules, we can hopefully get to 60, 90 days, you know, maybe you go a little bit beyond. But we're trying to size it for that small, go once a year and go for 30, 60, 90 days.
And kind of as the leader of the team here at KSC, do you guys feel a significant weight this year with the 50th anniversary of our first walk on the moon?
So I am blessed to have some amazing people at this Space Center helping me. And I couldn't get there without all the expertise and all the passion that's coming from this team. And it's definitely, you know, we all look around. A lot of us don't have memories of 50 years ago, right? So we know we're standing on the shoulders of giants, and it's pretty nostalgic and pretty emotional to think about the opportunity that's before us. So we're all really excited about that. That definitely makes it much more impactful and exciting. I've had the opportunity over the course of my career to work a couple times where you get to put together something that people don't think you're able to do. That's what our agency's founded on, right? I mean, this whole failure's not an option, right? That's what we're doing in Gateway. So, I mean, we are totally focused on trying to mold the clay into something that's going to be sustained excitement for the Space Coast, for Florida, for our agency, and something that we're proud of going forward.
And we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves with this question, but thinking about the future, obviously thinking about whenever you start a new project, you're thinking about your end goal. What do you think it's going to be like? How are you going to be feeling when we start seeing pieces of Gateway fly and when we turn on the lights?
So I've thought about this question a couple times as I go through it. You know, there's so many times where you lose sleep, where your head is just spinning trying to understand what information is being thrown at you and how you're going to put it all together. And you get a little bit of reprieve when you step back and think about how awesome of a challenge this is we're doing. I have a feeling that when the day comes that we first turn on the lights, I'm going to be so buried in trying to figure out how to make sure we get past the next problem that I'm not going to be able to step back and enjoy it. but I hope someone pinches me and we do, because we're going back to the moon. I mean, this is, it's hard to even fathom this. It's really amazing. I mean, this is the stuff that inspires the next generation. I mean, I was inspired by movies, and so many people find little things in science fiction and turn it into science fact, and we're paving that ground for, you know, for our kindergartners and our sixth graders and, you know, the child that's not born yet, which is really neat.
All right, guys, thank you so much, Johnny and Mark. Best of luck to you guys. Obviously, the nation is watching. We're excited to see you guys succeed over the next 5 years.
Thank you for having us, Josh. It's awesome. We're very excited to be the voice of Kennedy to try to bring this to bear, and it's going to take the whole workforce.
Yeah, me too, man. Thank you. It's a great time to be out here, to be part of something so important, to have a little bit of a legacy.
We've got a design review to get to.
I'm Joshua Santora, and that's our show. Thanks for stopping by the Rocket Ranch. And special thanks to our guests, Mark Weiss and Johnny Wynn. To learn more about mankind's future exploration of the moon, visit nasa.gov/moon to Mars. And to learn more about everything going on at the Kennedy Space Center, go to nasa.gov/Kennedy. Check out NASA's other podcasts to learn more about what's happening at all of our centers at nasa.gov/podcasts. A special shout out to my colleague, Amanda Griffin, our producer, John Sackman, our soundman, Lauren Mathry, and editor, Michelle Stone. And remember, on the Rocket Ranch, even the sky isn't the limit.
Did he say that with a smirk on his face?
A little bit, but I'll take it.